Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast, the 24th day of January, 2020. And if it seems like it's 2050, it's only because Adam Schiff is still rambling somewhere. Good Lord and Holy Frank Tanana. The guy just does not. I don't know what the Democrats think. What are they thinking? If we can bore them into submission. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. I appreciate you listening, tuning in, telling a friend, rating and reviewing on iTunes. We're approaching 1,000 starred reviews. So we're like, I don't know, 5 or 6 starred reviews on iTunes away from 1,000. That'd be pretty cool. And like 26, I think. Not that I check it a lot. Can't think. But I just happened to notice yesterday, like 26 written reviews away from whatever the next number is. I can't remember that one off the top of my head. But it'd be cool if we can get there as well. Anyway, either way, I don't care what you do. As long as you keep listening, telling a friend, spreading the word. Today is the Friday interview edition of the program, which means it's less heavy lifting for me, which is nice. Because I can't do any heavy lifting after having done a whole bunch of heavy expelling this week. But I'm feeling much, much better. We sit down with Liz Harrington, the national spokeswoman for the Republican National Committee. We get into topics that you guys sent in. We get into impeachment, of course. We go deep into impeachment. We have a good talk with Liz. Also ask her some tough questions about Republicans and why they're so damn good in the concept. When they campaign, they're very, very good. And then when they govern, they're less good, shall we say. You'll just have to listen. We spent a lot of, we got 50 minutes, 51 minutes with Liz Harrington, and you're going to enjoy all of it as you head off into your weekend. Don't forget that the president's defense in this impeachment sham begins tomorrow, Saturday. So while you're out doing whatever, if you've suffered through any of this unfettered shift for brains ramblings over the last 748 hours, you can hear a counter. And the fawning media go, oh my God, Alan Dershowitz's performance, his presentation was, will Mika start unbuttoning her blouse and going, oh, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen since Adam Schiff. I don't even know what's going on. No, of course not. The drooling sycophantic media that fawned over Adam Schiff's unchallenged lies will likely not work this weekend. They're paid, you know, millions of dollars to give their worthless opinions on cable news. I don't begrudge them making the money if they got their pay docked when they were wrong. All these people pontificating. I'd like to, you know, all right, you can make, we'll start at a base of $10 million. We'll start at a base of $5 million. You can work your way up to $10 million, or you can work your way down to $25,000. Each time you spew some BS that's wrong, we're going to take away $100,000. And every time that you get something that proves to be right, we'll give you an extra $25,000 or $50,000. You know, it'd be like a game show. And then at the end of the year, you find out how much each anchor or person, they're not even anchors. I like to call them all personalities because they are. Personality is so demeaning. That's one of the things that drives me nuts about that Fox Nation thing. When they're like, oh, your favorite Fox personalities. And like, these are the people you're telling us are telling us the news. And now they're just personalities. They're just la-di-da-di-da personalities. Kind of already knew that they weren't super journalistic, but hey, whatever. But I, all these other MSNBC and CNN people, they should have their pay based upon performance, not ratings. They'd all starve to death. That would be inhumane. But if their predictions proved true, if their pontifications proved out, then they should get a bump, a bonus, a little bonus. But when they're wrong, they should be docked. I think that's only fair. And I think a lot of people who vomit at the thought of, you know, Mika Brzezinski making $4 million a year to sit there with her sort of Prozac glazed eyes, lithium, God knows what else she's on and what else she's had done. Oops, did I say that? Are you allowed to say, it's sexist to say, but I think Joe has had more work done, to be perfectly honest with you, and probably more implants. That's beside the point. But I think people would be able to tolerate it. And you talk about it would help income inequality. But they would tolerate it if they knew that they were making less money and having to maybe pay a fine for being wrong. I'd be down with that. I'd like that. Anyway, that's the program today. You're going to enjoy the conversation with Liz. And big ups to Richie, who does not listen to the podcast, but he is the video guy over at the Daily Caller. And he has improved the audio quality in the studio. So it was excellent. And, you know, it used to be really bad. And I used to have to kind of mess with it behind the scenes. But now I don't have to. You can email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. I'll be likely active on Twitter most of Saturday because of the president's defense at Derek A. Hunter. You can always email me as well. Probably be less quick because I'll mostly be staring at my phone and running around chasing kids and being crawled on. But hopefully not vomited on this time. Fingers crossed. you set attainable goals, or at least hopefully attainable goals, and it makes parenting that much more exciting. But first, a word from our lovely, lovely sponsor, AncientLifeOil.com. CBD oil. I just put a gob of it under my tongue because it's the end of the day. It's an end of a long week, and my eyes were bugging me. And boom, about 3 minutes later, the eye stress was melting away. CBD oil is amazing. It helps you with those aches and pains and the stress and the anxiety and all those things that get wrong with you. But don't worry, it's not a marijuana product. It's a hemp product. That means that doesn't have the THC that's going to get you high. It just works. I don't understand the chemistry of it. I was skeptical of it to begin with. When they came to me, I thought, snake oil? I'm not really sure. But I'm a believer. CBD oil. Search for yourself. Google CBD oil benefits. Read some testimonials. Talk to your friends and family and see what they say. And you'll be surprised at who's using CBD oil and the positive things they have to say about it. And when you find out that it's something you're willing to give it a shot for the ankle pain or knee pain or the stress and the inability to turn your brain off and go to sleep at night, go to AncientLifeOil.com. They have the best. It's 100% organic. It is delicious. If you don't want to try the oil that you put under your tongue, they have topicals. You can rub it on your shoulder, wherever it hurts, whatever ails you, and you will be a believer. Go to AncientLifeOil.com. At checkout, enter promo code Derek. My name, super easy to remember, D-E-R-E-K. Hit the apply button. You get great savings. Great free shipping. I mean, they have sales and you get free shipping. You can't beat the deal. AncientLifeOil.com. Promo code Derek at checkout. Hit apply. Thank me later. Email me your thoughts on the impeachment mess. I'm curious. I want to know the format that the Republicans put together, that the Trump team put together, whether or not Dershowitz will be down on the floor of the Senate. I've always wanted to watch him make an argument in, well, it's not going to be in court, but I've always wanted to watch him work like he were in court. He's always been smart, even when he's annoyed the hell out of me. I'll also be curious to know whether or not Judge Starr, Ken Starr, gets up and makes a presentation. The Trump defense team has just as much time as the Democrats did, so it's not going to be all one day. They have over 3 days to use 24 hours. I imagine since it's Saturday, they won't go all that late. And I imagine since the Democrats are full of Schiff, they won't have to use all 24 hours. But try to catch some of it, even if on radio, way down at the left of the dial, near all the cool radio stations that play the cool music that your kids like. There'll be some C-SPAN feed. You'll be able to hear it if you're out driving around. Otherwise, that's about it for me. You can support the program if you do. I appreciate it, and I love you. At patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Appreciate all the... You guys send me, like, cool cards and letters and gifts and everything to the Daily Caller office, which is freaking awesome. I go in there one day a week, and I go in there, and there's, like... Everybody's like, you got a package over here. You got an envelope. You got some mail over there. And it's like, ooh, neat. Neat, because I just mostly get bills at home. So it's awesome to get those things. So I appreciate that. If you want to send me anything other than something illegal, it is 1920 L Street, Northwest, L, just the letter L, Northwest, NW, Suite 200, Washington, D.C., 20036. So just put it to my attention at the Daily Caller, and I will get it, and I will open it, and I will thank you, and all that cool stuff. Plus, it makes everybody in the office jealous. They're in there all the time. I'm covered in baby waste, and I get to come in, and somebody sends me Legos or a giant, awesome beanbag game. Whatever it is, I appreciate it. So have a great weekend. Don't watch all of the impeachment hearings, but catch some of it. But most importantly, have fun. Now here is the Liz Harrington, RNC National Spokeswoman interview. All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 24th day of January 2020 AD, just in case you're lost or drunk. And as we do every week, we drag somebody in from their lives into our miserable existence. But this week's actually an upgrade for the person. They're dragging them away from watching C-SPAN or cable news or whatever they're watching, because it's their job to watch and react the Senate impeachment trial, the opening statements. It's Liz Harrington, national spokeswoman for the Republican National Committee. Liz, I'm sorry to take you away from Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff and Zoe Lofgren.
Oh, thank God. You really saved me, actually.
Are you okay? No, I'm okay. You need to stream it on your phone. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm missing so much of what we heard for the last 3 years now.
Oh, Lord.
Russia, Russia, Russia.
This does seem, it is weird that a lot of the opening arguments have been focused on things for which the president was not impeached.
Things that never happened.
Well, aside from that.
Acting like we didn't live through 2 years of a special counsel that unearthed, scoured the planet trying to prove Hillary Clinton's crazy collusion conspiracy theory. It's almost like it never happened, and they never turned up with nothing, because 4 hours... 2 days ago, when Adam Schiff had the first opportunity to lay out the overwhelming case that they apparently need more evidence for to prove, for the first 4 hours, he mentioned Russia 102 times. And I was like, wait, I thought this was about Ukraine. What's going on here?
Very similar, and I'm not sure Adam could spot either on a map. But he'd have a better shot at hitting Russia with a dart just because it's bigger. But are you, like, I understand that it's your job. But as a human being, you're watching this thing. And I think anybody who's just sort of stumbling upon it, you would not know what impeachment is about based on the opening arguments. They are literally throwing everything at the wall, somehow expecting, I don't know, maybe the Senate will go, well, let's just vote on something that is, the articles of impeachment are very clear. They're two made up charges, obstruction of Congress, which doesn't exist, and abuse of power, which is a tactic, not a crime. And they're not really arguing that very much.
They're repeating the same things that didn't end up in the actual articles. How many times do we have to hear quid pro quo, which they couldn't prove?
Or bribery. They just dropped all of this. They threw it out there.
But all of a sudden they're talking about it as if it was proven. And it was never proven. In fact, every single one of the Democrats' star witnesses said there was no quid pro quo with the aid money. There wasn't. And Ambassador Sondland actually said and agreed not a single person on the planet said there was. So now it was so flimsy, it didn't even make it into their articles. But now they're suddenly just bringing it up again to try to make it sound as if it happened, and it never happened. It's really pathetic, and it really, they have absolutely no case.
From a messaging standpoint over at the RNC, I imagine you guys prepared
because that's your job, and you had a lot of contingencies. Did you have a contingency for the impeachment managers not actually arguing the impeachment articles?
Right. You got to be prepared for anything, because it has been the most jumbled, incoherent. I mean, talk about not having a plan or strategy. This has been a complete fiasco. Nancy Pelosi, I love how she just before, I guess it was just after Christmas, she's trying to clean up this strategy. Once it fell apart, that it was very clear that her holding the articles that were so urgent, right, threat to democracy, hostage for 28 days, actually got her nothing and made the Democrats look even more ridiculous than they already had. And then she does this, has this glowing profile in Time magazine, acting as if she was the architect. She was the grand. She had this strategy all along. It's like, you want to take credit for this? It's been a complete disaster. They can't argue the action, what's in the articles. They can't argue anything. And that's why they spent hours talking about Russia again. And what's so insulting is at least they're kind of half admitting what this is about now when Adam Schiff says, we can't resolve this at the ballot box, because he, of course, is accusing President Trump not only of stealing the last election,
but stealing the next one.
Trying to steal the next one.
Which I thought was a threat to our democracy in and of itself. Hillary Clinton tweeted that Donald Trump refusing to say he would accept the results of the 2016 election was a threat to our democracy. That's all they've done. Ask a Democrat who won the gubernatorial election in 2018 in Georgia. You'll get this. Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams clearly won. They don't accept when they lose. They only accept when they win, which
exactly.
I suppose is a good spirit to have in a competitive sense. But in a practical sense, it makes you look buffoonish.
And it's so insulting. In their brief, they claim they believe it's a fundamental part of America, that Americans decide American elections. And then in their argument, they say, we can't take that chance. We can't say it'll be fair. And honestly, you know, they're right. It's really not fair to have to run against 7.3 million jobs, lowest unemployment in 50 years, two top terrorists dead, two Supreme Court justices, 187 new judges to the federal bench, the tax cuts, the deregulation, the booming economy, the new trade deal with China, USMCA, all of these promises that 3 years ago during his inaugural address President Trump made, and he's following through. That's right. You're right. That's not fair. They have to run against that. That's really not going to be fair.
Well, they're going to have Bernie. I don't know how that doesn't appeal to everybody. But let's talk about the numbers that you just cited and the simple fact that normally, in a normal presidential reelection, a president presiding over the sort of economic boom that we're all experiencing would be a Reagan 84, Bill Clinton 96 kind of reelection year. That's not what the polling data is showing. Why isn't it that with those numbers that President Trump's popularity hasn't expanded? It should. On the economy,
it's gone up five points.
Right, but in the economy, he's still under 50% on everything except the economy. The economy, he's getting high marks. Not high as I think he deserves, but he's certainly getting higher marks than anything else. Is it the fog of the media that's keeping the number suppressed? Is it his tweeting? Where is it that people are, there's this disconnect. I like the results. I don't like how we got here. That sort of mentality with so many. I'm not saying that's how they're going to vote, but it's how they poll.
Well, President Trump said this the other day, add 5 or 7 points to any poll. That's what they tell him, because it is there's obviously effect, a societal effect. When Hollywood, the media, and everyone, did you see the Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yes.
Episode
I thought it was
premiere?
Funny.
It was hilarious. And it's just true. It's like, you know, put it on the MAGA hat. You know, it was it actually said a lot more about Hollywood than
right.
It does about us. But absolutely there's that effect. March for Life, year ago, with what's his name? The Sandman. Nicholas
yeah.
Sandman. Tried to ruin his life for just wearing a MAGA hat and standing there and smiling. Wanted to ruin his life. I'm glad he settled with CNN.
I wish that would have been public.
Obviously, there's an effect that you're going to tell a stranger. And polls, public polling, almost always oversamples Democrats. So you're already kind of trying to make up ground there. And why are you going to tell some pollster, yeah, I support the president? No, you're not. So there is an effect. And
do you think it's as much as 5 to 7%?
You know, absolutely. And you look at what's a far more interesting and fascinating number that I was just looking at. Brad Parscale, the Trump campaign manager, tweets out our rally data, and it gives such an interesting snapshot of who is signing up and who comes out to see the president when he does these great rallies. Well, I went through the last 8 since September, so since this impeachment sham really got going, and 24.8% registered Democrats across those 8 rallies. The president's speaking to a lot of people and a lot of disaffected voters who have been left behind by their party, who the overreach and the onslaught and the resistance and the unwillingness to accept 2016 that's made the Democrats hysterical, it's driven them all to embrace socialism, all this stuff, they're getting left behind by their own party. They're turning off independents. They're turning off their own party. Just ask Jeff Van Drew. Our job has already made it easier because we don't have to win back 31 seats that Trump won in 2016 where Democrats now sit in the House. We only have to win back 30 now. And it's because of the Democrats' overreach again and again and again. And those are the numbers that I find far more interesting than the public polls that have never been able to poll this president accurately.
I suspect this is there's a combination, and I'm going to ask you sort of for maybe a ballpark percentage, which I don't know that you'll give. But of that, we'll just round it up to 25% of Democrats that are coming out. Do you find that voters, what percentage are being attracted by President Trump, and which percentage are being repulsed by Democrats, do you think?
Well, if you're going out to a rally, you want to hear the president. And so
you could just
I think
be Trump curious, though.
You could be. Sure. I'm sure.
And it is a social event. I mean, it's a blast whether you like it or not.
It is amazing. But of course, it's probably a combination of both. But it's what we had kind of seen what happened with the Reagan Revolution. All these disaffected Democrats who voted Democrat their whole life, raised Democrats. And then all of a sudden, the 60s and 70s happened. And they're like, this isn't my party. And they ended up being Reagan Republicans. The same similar phenomenon, I think, is happening here. President Trump, his message, the results, the common sense, the connection he has with working everyday people. Because he's worked with them his whole life. He's a builder. He knows the contractors. He's had to work with these people his whole life. He knows them. He likes them. And he wants them to succeed. And there's this connection he has. And I think a lot of people, when you look at who's coming out of those Democrats, a lot of it are people that haven't voted in the last few elections very often. They maybe voted in 1 in the last 4, maybe 2.
These are the people who sit around and go, what difference does it make? They're basically the same party, so who cares?
Which,
and suddenly
exactly,
this guy comes out
and says, let's drain the swamp. And he railed against the establishment and wanted Washington to change. And he's bringing change, which is, it's been amazing to see. And it's an attractive message, but the results are attractive too.
It is bizarre, I think, to a lot of people. And somebody on the inside, I imagine this comes up at the RNC and in your talks with the campaign and maybe meetings with the president. He's been rich his whole life. He's been rich his whole life. Yet he relates more to a guy who digs ditches than someone like Joe Biden, who grew up a modest means, but has been a Northeast Corridor Acela guy for all of his adult life. He hit puberty and he's on the public dole in one form or another.
Exactly.
And he's been there ever since. He's hit menopause now, and he's still trying to get back on it. Why? How? How is this guy who's, you know, a millionaire from birth, billionaire now, able to relate
to
somebody?
He's had to fight for everything. He has had to fight.
He had to fight for everything.
He's
worked
a fighter.
For everything.
He's worked for everything. It's the same spirit and mentality. And Joe Biden Here you have Joe Biden by his own admission.
A guy who doesn't drink and a guy who has a six-pack of Pabst in his fridge looks at him and feels like, that guy gets me. That guy's living in a penthouse. And anybody, Hollywood, Leonardo DiCaprio, nobody looks at Leonardo DiCaprio and goes, that guy gets me. Because he doesn't get you. He's lived a weird life and a life that you couldn't possibly imagine. Donald Trump has lived a life that we couldn't possibly imagine. Yet there's that sense of, and it really does come across, that he gets me.
And because it's not like he's just been up in his penthouse this whole time, sitting there. It's not like Joe Biden, like you mentioned, by his own admission, says he's never cashed a paycheck in his life. Never. He's always been in government. Trump was out there building things. And when you actually create things and build things, you bring a lot of people together. You have to work with a variety of people. And when you build an international business, you get to know all walks of life. And you connect with it. And you want to get that building built. And you're fighting the city, and you're fighting Jerry Nadler all the way back then. You know the game, and you cut through the nonsense. And that's what people appreciate about President Trump. He's so consistent, and he always is straight with you. He's an open book. Nothing these Democrats on that debate stage, they're all so phony. Joe Biden says he's going to rebuild the middle class. The only thing he's ever rebuilt in half a century in the swamp is Hunter Biden's resume after he got kicked out of the Navy.
He maintained the Amtrak lines between here right. and Delaware because, well, he also got Hunter a job on the board.
Yep.
It's a pretty sweet deal.
Long history.
My dad had done that.
Of building up that resume. Not the middle class, though.
When you look at, I want to talk to you because you used to work in media. And the media coverage of this impeachment trial has been something else. The CNN, the Senate floor has kind of turned into a CNN or MSNBC show where they're just showing clips and commenting about it, and relevant clips, very, very short clips down to a couple of seconds, right. Whatever. They crop out any context or anything like that. You are the national spokeswoman for the Republican National Committee. The President of the United States is the head of the Republican Party. Have you been contacted by CNN or MSNBC to go on them? I'm asking this. I don't know the answer.
No, well, they don't want to hear.
Doesn't it seem odd to you as a former reporter going, wait a second, even if you're going to do nothing but attack you for the interest of journalism, to at least be able to use that word in air quotes, they should reach out.
They're not interested in
they
hearing.
They used to fake it, though.
They've thrown all that out. The appearance of any kind of semblance of both sides, that's been out the window for years now. It's completely gone. But we started off this show, it's so boring, and this is giving me a break from it. My favorite breaks so far have been listening to Chris Matthews because he's provided some entertainment. So my favorite things he said. First, he insulted low information voters that he claims that President Trump appeals to, who are more interested in Harry and Meghan than this. And I'm like, well, yeah, Megxit is far more interesting than this charade. I mean, what? Like, that's an insult. And this is even better because today.
Well, having
Chris
things,
Matthews,
better things to do with your life is
Chris
an insult.
Chris Matthews thought he really was insulting President Trump when he said, maybe he's like the guy, like a character like John Wayne, who's not a good guy, but he comes in and saves the day.
Has he ever seen
maybe
a John
Trump's
Wayne
like
movie?
That. I was like, wait, so is this supposed to be an insult? He's the guy you don't want to have dinner with? Well, I'd love to have dinner with John Wayne.
Right.
I don't know about you, but this is the insult. The guy that the anti-hero, I guess, is they're portraying him. And it's like, well, I think a lot of people wanted someone like a John Wayne to come in and screw around Washington and get them out of here. I mean, they look at the last 3 years we've been living in, the swamp. I mean, it's pathetic. They've tried to sabotage everything. They are not interested at all in governing or doing anything what they claim to support on policy, on anything. No, they're only interested in their power. And President Trump totally exposes that.
The Republicans in the Senate have been united insofar as the rules are to this point. Is there any fear at the party that there could be four votes for, I'm not going to name names because I wouldn't want to signal out Romney and the other. Hi, Mitt. But is there concern, or is it just a matter of all you're going to do is prolong this? Let's just get it over with. Because I don't know. The president seems to be of two minds of this. He obviously wants to get this over with because it's hampering the government's ability to do anything. But a quick acquittal, I don't know that he'd be satisfied, or quick dismissal or whatever. I think he wants a full exoneration. So where is the RNC? I know you're planning for all contingencies, but from a strategic standpoint, which is better for 2020?
Well, it's obviously best to have an acquittal, which we will get. And however long that takes, it's going to be the same result. But I think people deserve to have an airing of all the facts, right? Which the facts are really known at this point, except the ones that Adam Schiff is still sitting on, right? And how this whole sham got started. The only new information we can really learn from, if they want to call new witnesses, is what Adam Schiff was talking to the CIA Democrat, quote unquote, whistleblower. Mm-hmm. He's still sitting on the deposition of the Inspector General, Michael Atkinson, to this day. It was done back in October. Why is he doing that? So our mind is, look, we defer to this Senate and the House, or the White House counsel. They have an incredible team. Just the little bit we've gotten to see from Pat Cipollone, fantastic, and Jay Sekulow, and all of them. They're prepared for everything, but also Democrats in the Senate, they're going to have to take some tough votes too. Doug Jones, Alabama, there are plenty of Democrats in Trump won states as well. And we want it to be fair, and we want all the truth to come out. And really, we know exactly what happened. We know the president, what he said on the phone call. He released the transcript. We know why the aid was delayed. We know what Senator Ron Johnson said. Totally backing up what the president said on the phone call. Why? Where's Germany? Where's Europe? Why aren't our allies doing more? So we know all of this. We can clear his name without any additional witnesses or anything else. But we're not going to play the game that the Democrats rigged in the House, which is we're only going to call who the Democrats want to call. That's not going to happen.
Who's the bigger 2020 opponent, the Democrats or the media for the Republican National Committee?
I think that's the media, right? I mean, why would they be doing this? Clearly, they don't feel confident about any of these candidates they have left, a bunch of elderly white socialists. And then a mayor from a small town.
Former mayor now.
Former mayor, right? Who is just as radical as the rest of them. It's a joke. They don't have anybody. They know that. Just ask Van Jones. Just ask Al Sharpton. What did they say after the debate? They said, not any of those people on the stage can take on Trump. This is what they said. And they know it. That's why they're going for this impeachment. It's all a political strategy for them. But it's going to backfire big time. So who is a bigger opponent? I would say the media, because, you know, you still got to combat it every single day. They have a lot of control over trying to set the narrative. That's why it's our job to get out and change the narrative and proactively sidestep the media. So, yeah, I think the media is a bigger... it's one and the same. Well, yeah. They're all Democrats.
I understand that. It's just a matter of whether or not they hold a press credential.
Right.
As the party affiliation is understood.
Whether or not they're asking the questions or answering the questions.
I know you guys... there's no active primary. There are a couple of also-rans whose names are going to be on the ballot. Bill Weld seems to not know where he is half the time. He should be Joe Biden's running mate because he would make Joe Biden look coherent. But the RNC has a presence in these states. Obviously, you're keeping an eye on what's going on from a strategy standpoint. One of them will rise to the top and be the Democratic nominee. This impeachment trial is taking two of the top tier candidates and Amy Klobuchar off the campaign trail. Is the more attention that Joe Biden can now soak up helping or hurting him? Because Joe Biden's a very...
Well, his campaign's out with videos about Ukraine and Hunter.
I don't know what they're doing. But he's usually the problem. And he's a much more popular concept than he is a reality. And so when the people get to see him more, they go, oh, my God, I have to think of something else. So in one sense, there's this argument that Nancy Pelosi sort of withheld these articles till now to drag Bernie and Elizabeth off the trail out of Iowa to give Joe Biden the chance to shine. And then there's the reality that Joe Biden doesn't shine anymore. So just from a watching it and paying attention and knowing the inner workings and some grumblings on the ground, is this helping or hurting Joe Biden having the stage to himself?
I don't think anything really helps Joe Biden at this point. He can't help himself. He's never gotten out of Iowa before.
No, he got 1% in 2008.
Think about what they did to Bernie last time, right? And now they're keeping him off when he's surging in Iowa. I have to imagine that doesn't make a lot of the base of the Democrat Party very happy. And so that's stirring up a lot of things. Hillary's coming back out there.
Hey, what do you make of Hillary coming out in this documentary? In an interview for the documentary saying, nobody likes Bernie. He's never done anything. He's got one person who likes him.
She's a very bitter person. And I don't think she cares at this point whether it's good for her party or anybody but herself. She's just bitter, angry, and, well, like a lot of the Democrats, unable to get over what happened in 2016.
Reality has that effect on some people.
But it is bizarre. You would think you would have enough self-control and enough, not be a little bit selfless and take yourself out of it and not stir up all that.
Well, especially selfless, are you kidding?
I know. You would, but
tell me,
she's never going to be president. She is nothing. Why would she do it now?
Does the RNC have a...
I love it when she comes out.
Does the RNC have an in case of emergency break glass plan? Just in case a brokered convention happens on the Democratic side and suddenly the fog parts and down floats Hillary saying, I shall bring us all together. I'm going to break that glass right now.
Like, please happen.
But is there talk of that? Because if they go into a brokered convention, I think that has to be Michael Bloomberg's strategy. He has more money than God and less support than the devil. So he's not going to win primaries. But if it's a mess, he's got the money to sort of come in and muscle his way through a convention.
And again, thinking about what they're doing to their base, the establishment, yet again, keeping Bernie off the trail, Hillary coming out, and then... a billionaire trying to buy the election?
Two billionaires. The party of the blue collar is
right, your qualifications are now old white socialist or a billionaire.
Well, that's they're all rich.
Right, they're all rich. They're a millionaire or a billionaire. Because Warren, she's worth multi-millions. Bernie.
And with Pete's book sales last year, he's probably
got over
a million.
Well on his way. But the contradictions and the really division... They always say, oh, Republicans, no, we have never been more united. We agree on fundamental issues. They have a disaster. You have AOC out there saying their party's a center-right party.
I love that. They're not left enough.
Completely
you can't even get a vote on socialized medicine.
Railing against billionaires, absolute class warfare. And it's, well, you've got two billionaires in your own that are left. I think this can't be very inspiring to their base. So again, do you have to wonder, you don't even have to wonder why they're doing what they're doing. It's all they have.
Where is the heart of the Democratic Party these days? You do have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or you have to say it, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you have to say it like a local news anchor pronounces Tijuana in the middle of a sentence to be not called a racist, but... You have her declaring the party center-right-ish, not nearly radical and not anywhere close to it. The Amy Klobuchar is left. There's no doubt that she's left, but she's not a Bernie Sanders left. There was a time, there was a thing, look it up, something called the Blue Dog Democrats, who are concerned about budget deficits and government
guess
spending.
Guess where they are? At the Trump rally. Right. They're 25%.
There used to be a decent caucus of Blue Dog Democrats in the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
They've gone extinct. So where is the heart of the Democratic Party, and who does that appeal to?
It is very radical. I think that's where the heart is. Look at Joe Biden, right? He's supposed to be this moderate choice. And the other day he comes out for DUIs, illegal aliens, not going to...
No deportations for people.
This is crazy. Lawless. But that's what... You have Bernie endorsed by the Socialist Squad, calling for revolution and... Warren is just, they're arguing it. They don't want to be called a capitalist, all this stuff. That's clearly where they think the energy is. It's not where the country is. I think it's pretty dangerous that they're normalizing such radical, dangerous ideologies. I mean, that interview that Ocasio-Cortez gave the other day is just downright Marxist. I'm sorry, it is. It is very ignorant and very scary because, well, it shouldn't be that surprising when you're front runner honeymooned in the Soviet Union.
Right.
And this is what you get. But it needs to be defeated resoundingly in November and go back to the fringe and stay for another couple decades.
I don't know that it's the fringe anymore.
And then they
anymore,
can go
though.
Back to... the era of big government is over. That Democrat Party. That would be great to see.
That seems like five lifetimes ago, but it wasn't all that long ago. Is the RNC? I don't know how you prepare for, because you know it makes sense. You talk to anybody who loves capitalism, loves liberty, and the idea of turning into a socialist country seems bizarre. But the prospect of one of the two major political parties in this country nominating somebody as far as Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders are to the left, embracing the antithesis of what made this country so successful. How do you, if you lose, that's, you know, 42%, we'll just say, of the party, Democrats would embrace that. How do you campaign against that? Is there, I know you just say, well, we just talk about freedom, we talk about the success. But if something that radical and that insane and so detached from reality and history, so ignorant of history, resonates with that many people, you're really approaching a dangerous tipping point, I think, that you can't just, if it's already there, you can't just say they're crazy. There has to be some kind of almost educational outreach campaign to tell people that the rest of the 8% of the independent voters, the non-committed voters, don't go over there. Here's what the problem is. Is there a plan in place, and can you shed a little bit of light on that?
We already do have a Victims of Socialism campaign that's going to be expanding. Our first series, it's a series of long-form interviews with people. The first one focuses on Venezuela. Very rich country, not that long ago. And the Trump campaign put out a video of Hugo Chavez's words, Ocasio-Cortez's words, about how you need the democratic socialists, you need the democracy with the socialism, the same thing. So it is absolutely about putting people out there in their own words and their own stories. These interviews are devastating, of them saying, we didn't think it could happen here. We didn't think this was going to happen. And then they started imprisoning people for their political beliefs, people in just food lines, starving. I mean, it's absolutely devastating what's happened in Venezuela, but it's happened everywhere it's been tried.
Right.
So Victims of Socialism is one of our major campaigns at the RNC that we're going to be expanding to not just Venezuela, because it's happened everywhere. And highlighting these different things, but absolutely there needs to be, which I think is important, that President Trump won and will win again, because he's made it okay to be proud of America again. Because how does this happen that all these people start to think that, yeah, socialism, that sounds great? Well, they don't have respect or knowledge and history and love of our system, of the uniqueness of our system, where it came from, what it's based in, how it's different from the rest of the world, but it's been so refreshing to have someone not apologizing for America, sticking up for America, saying we're the greatest country on earth, and we're going to continue to be. So that's important, making it acceptable again. And but yeah, absolutely, there's a whole the ignorance on history out of a lot of these politicians on the Democrat side is very troubling, and we have
I don't think they're ignorant of history. I think they know history well. They're lying about it in the hopes that their audiences are ignorant of history. When you look at a lot of the messaging and a lot of the arguments that they're making, there's a risk of politicians, and I think it's always underestimated, that they could be victims of their own success. The economy is doing well. Everybody who's got it wants a job, pretty much has a job. You can leverage wages. You can raise your wages by getting another job and negotiating that way. It leads to a little bit of complacency, where it does open up people to the argument that government should be doing more. Some people aren't benefiting. And so you have to kind of counter that. What is the argument against, we need to expand the social safety net. We need to raise the bar for Medicaid enrollment. We need to expand food. We shouldn't be kicking people. The people who are on food stamps need more help, meaning ingraining the existing government dependency in the name of compassion. It's always done in the name of compassion. It's anything but compassionate, but it's done in that name. The success that the economy is having right now allows us, it's the wrong word, but these frivolities, the ability to pay attention to secondary things. When it's guns and butter, it's guns and butter. But when it's beyond butter, it's something else.
It's why we have this, I mean, it's throughout human history, but usually what happens when countries, you have a lot of freedom and you get a lot of success, that's when these dangerous ideologies start creeping in, because, you know, you don't have as many problems.
We're the richest country in the world. We can help people.
You can start thinking about philosophy and all this humanist stuff. But absolutely, we got to keep showing the truth of it all and saying, do you really want your taxes to double and triple, to not even pay for this amazing story came out today about Bernie Sanders. His wealth tax, which any one of these wealth taxes would absolutely destroy the economy.
What would they go through your house and say that painting is worth this much? We're going to need.
But guess so. A new study out of Wharton said that Bernie has misjudged how much he's going to raise from his wealth tax by $1.5 trillion.
It's a rounding error.
But the kicker is, even if you took Bernie by his own estimates, which.
Right.
How good are socialists at math?
The guy was kicked out of a commune for being lazy.
It's like $4 trillion is what he says he's going to over 10 years. Do you know how much we spent last year? $4.4 trillion. So confiscating the wealth, ruining the economy, making us terrible for business again, destroying our growth, absolutely destroying. For that wealth tax, we'd fund a year of our current budget, let alone the free college, the free healthcare,
the free this.
It is impossible. I'm sorry. It is insane. But never going to happen. And we got to talk about this, though. You would absolutely, if they got their way, they would destroy this country. They destroy the economy.
But in a lot of ways, it's a concept to people, though, that they're going to. I mean, it's a reality, but it's a concept in the argument because they haven't destroyed this country. In many ways, you're running against the Wizard of Oz. Promise you everything, promise you anything. And that's it's difficult to run against a concept, especially a concept that's foreign to people, because you're saying, look, Venezuela was ruined.
But people are smart, though. They're not. They get it. And they know anything in their own life, nothing's free. So what's going to be the
cost? Did you see the guy who walked up?
That was Elizabeth Warren. I mean, she's got many problems. But that's when she really started taking, when she kept lying, which is what she does best, about the middle class.
She's a wonderful storyteller.
Right.
According to the New York Times.
And that was very insulting, the New York Times did. They're so progressive. They made two women share it. Instead, yeah. Fight it out. hilarious.
But Elizabeth Warren stepped in it the other day at an event, I believe in Iowa, where a guy came up to her. It's sort of, it's clouded audio because it's camera phone and captured through a crowd, where a guy's like, I saved my life to send my daughter to college and pay for it. Am I going to get my money back? And she said, no, you're not. I said, well, then why are you going to offer free and forgive the debt to somebody else who acted irresponsibly and didn't save for their kids' education?
There is still inherent in Americans fairness.
It gives you a smile every once in a while.
It does. Somebody,
you see somebody go, you get it.
You totally, but that is absolutely, that's not fair.
Yes.
It's not fair what they did to Kavanaugh. It's not fair what they're doing to Trump. And it's not fair that you're going to give, you're all raising your hands on the debate stage and promising that illegal aliens step one foot in this country, never mind the thousands, hundreds of millions of people waiting in line, doing it the right way, trying to become a citizen of this country, trying to immigrate here legally. No, no. You set one foot, citizen, we'll give you free college, free health care, driver's license. Oh, here, come vote.
We don't even need the citizen. We'll get, it's almost
no
more
citizen.
Beneficial to be
no
in the
citizen,
country illegally
we'll
than a citizen.
Driver's license and, oh, we'll register to vote, you to vote while you're at it. It's so transparent, and people see that. Guess what? Guess what we bet on? We bet on the American people being smart. Democrats think we're all stupid, and it's insulting, and people don't like it. And it's the same thing they're doing this impeachment. When you say flat out, we just can't settle this at the ballot box. No, Americans say we're less than 10 months away from the next election. I'll choose who my president's going to be, thank you. I'll vote who I want to vote for. And the Democrats fundamentally are trying to take that away. And it is going to backfire on them so much because people are smarter than that. And they're insulted, and they should be.
We've been talking about the national issue. Obviously, it's the news of the week, and it's your job. But Diane wrote in, and she wants to know about the local issues as well, because everything sort of percolates up. The welfare reform, Tommy Thompson came up with that as governor of Wisconsin. It was, you know, the local level, these people, the next level of rising stars. Politics is always churning. You've got to come up with new. What can you tell people what the RNC is doing, working, I imagine, with state parties and local parties, county level parties, to, because Democrats had a banner year in 2018 in the election. This year, the governorships are up in a lot of places. Those are going to help with redistricting, keeping Democrats from drawing lines like they have in Maryland that look like somebody sneezed on a wet Rorschach test to try and get rid of all the Republicans they possibly can. They get rid of all of them but one. And it wasn't for lack of trying to get rid of the last one. They just needed a place to stuff Republicans. And they said, okay, this one district, you can have it. But the local issues are very important because they do impact people's lives more directly and more immediately. What are you seeing and what does the RNC do to help state-level politicians sort of solidify a purple area to turn it red?
We work with all the different state organizations up and down, and we give them resources, our data operation, for instance. We've invested $350 million into, and we give that to all of our candidates for free. Democrats charge it. They charge you for it because they're so broke at the DNC.
They want everything else to be free.
Right. It was amazing. It all starts at the grassroots level. And obviously the NRCC is involved, but we just had a story come out involved with the NRCC. 1,000 people had decided to run for office since impeachment, since they decided for Republicans. And it's energizing people, and that's super important. But yes, working up and down, in office, volunteering, that's where elections are won, and that's what we're trying to do, elect Republicans up and down the ballot, because it's so important. It's important to win elections, to change things, and to make life better, and have less government. And, I mean, we've seen the results. So it's about engaging them in our more political structure. It's about the 30,000 volunteers and growing. I think it's going to be up to 75,000 after once it's all said and done, of people engaged with the local candidates at every single level throughout the states, top to bottom, because it's super important. You know, the midterms were tough, but historically they were not that abnormal. They're actually pretty average. That's usually how many seats you lose when you have full control of government and an incumbent or the first term of a new president. But we're super optimistic and super energized and really excited about our chances for this November, because we've never seen anything like it. We've never seen a party so unified, so many people getting engaged, so many new, the fundraising, the volunteers, it's been incredible. So we're very excited about changing those local issues, because you're absolutely right. That's where it all starts, and that's where liberalism creeps in. I've seen it. I'm from Maryland. I've seen it creep in, and I, you know, look at what's happening in Virginia. It was amazing to see all those people come
out. It's great, but they should have, if they'd have voted with that passion and campaigned with that passion, they wouldn't have to lobby.
You can't get idle. You can't get complacent. It's so true, because the second they, you know, the chance they get, and look what they're doing. And the good news is we still look at what we've done on the courts, and there's no way what Virginia wants to do is constitutional.
Right.
And so that's another huge issue that's been so important. That it's just going to be so, the long-term effects that we can have through that way is going to be amazing.
As we get to the end here, I want to ask you a more philosophical question, but maybe a little difficult, certainly unexpected, I think. Republicans are very good at campaigning on smaller government and less good at implementing it when they have power. They had power for the first 2 years of the Trump administration, and they did not repeal and replace Obamacare, thanks to John McCain, but it didn't happen. Why do Republicans deserve to retake the House of Representatives? Because we've heard the promises. We've seen some of them fulfilled, but not very many. They all campaign uniformly on these things, and they vote differently on many of them. So why do Republicans, not that Democrats deserve it, I certainly don't think so, but why do Republicans are great when they're out? I love what they say. I love the rhetoric. I love the passion. I love the seeming willingness to fight. When they have the reins, it's a different story. So with that disappointment possibly looming, why do Republicans deserve to win again rather than Democrats are just awful?
Because I think it's a whole new ball game. When you look at the leadership we have now, and it is so unified and so solidified. President Trump was very new to Washington, obviously. And still, he's learned some stuff along the way. But still has been able to accomplish so much. And a lot of it has been after Democrats took the House. So we had the opportunity of seeing, especially after seeing what the Democrats do with their power, the opportunity to get that back and to not waste an opportunity. I think we all feel that, and we really all are committed to it. And you hear what President Trump is talking about in the interview he gave at Davos, I think with CNBC and all the, there are so many more things we can do with, I mean, administratively, the way they've done the regulation cuts is phenomenal. The tax cuts, which we did get with the Republican House, were amazing. If we keep that going and we expand it, and we can start getting to huge growth numbers, start talking about issues like the debt, start being responsible, start doing all of these amazing things, looking at the future, we can do it. And that's what's amazing about President Trump.
I wish. They've been talking about the debt and the deficit for a very long time, and then they didn't do anything about it.
You're never going to get it with
Democrats. Well, I know you're never going to get it with Democrats. And I know that they're promising more money than exists every year spent.
But you have solid leadership now. And the Republican leadership in the House is very solid. And
Are you saying that Paul Ryan wasn't?
He was a guy, if you want to read some
I will
media
say it.
Reports.
He wasn't.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll say it.
Look, he was a lame duck speaker. Right. He announced like a year before he was leaving, and he allowed a lot of retirements. I think President Trump's spoken about it. I think you can have a lot of opinions about the job he did, but I think we're all on the same page now, and we're all committed to the same things. Because, you know, you're talking about a guy like Paul Ryan, who, he knows what the media did. He was pushing Granny off the cliff. He was supposed to reform entitlements, all these things. President Trump, Mick Mulvaney, who was then the OMB director, presented the most conservative budgets we've ever seen. Cutting spending, frivolous spending, waste, just amazing budgets. Paul Ryan's house didn't pass it, okay? Like, so now we have much better Republican leadership. I believe that. And this is our opportunity to really change. And look what we've been able to do.
How fun would it be to watch Nancy Pelosi hand the gavel over to Kevin McCarthy?
Not once, but twice.
Well, I know, but to Kevin McCarthy rather than Paul Ryan. At least another. Look, I hope Republicans are really up there. I hope that the last year and this coming year are causing Republicans to sharpen and harden their elbows and going, you know what, we can't play nice.
I think it has been an amazing time in the Republican Party. We're so united, and we want the same things. And that is because President Trump has really given a spine to a lot of people. And really, he's exposed so many things. And you look at the insane reaction from the left and the Democrats and the media, and you see it's very illuminating, and you see what we need to be fighting for, and we're committed to that.
Liz Harrington, Republican National Committee, is at rnc.org?
No, .com. Or GOP.com.
GOP.com. I don't know how to use the interweb. This is
sounded like I didn't know either.
This is an IKEA display unit. It's not even a real computer. The convention's coming up. Big names going to be coming to the convention. And he sort of, wasn't last time, but 2012, we had Clint Eastwood out there. I don't want to know what they are, because you're obviously not going to tell me, but is there grumblings? Is there workings? Is there something?
It's going to be awesome.
I'm going to be there, so it already is. But I want something to do.
To do your show there.
There you go. Absolutely. And my radio show and everything. So, Liz, thanks for coming in. Sorry to drag you away from Jerry Nadler.
I'm sure I missed so much.
You missed their lunch break, more than likely. Follow you on social media at?
LizRNC.
LizRNC. Good luck, and come back in a couple of months, and we'll laugh about this, and we'll talk about the election.
Right.
That's all the time we have. It's Friday. Go out and have a drink. Take a rest. Tomorrow, the president's defense starts. So I was actually thinking of having a party. I'm not going to, because I'm not insane, but it did occur to me. But make sure you watch it. We'll be back here on Monday. See you then.